You know, promises, and we always talk about promises. They are, I always think about when I was a kid, my mother used to always promise me I could go to a picture show on Saturday. And the promises are never, they have been the same all my life. Every time somebody promised me something, they had some upfront stuff for us to do, you know. And she'd say, after you do this, you do this, you do this, you're going to get the good promises. But they come always at the results of work. And these will always materialize. It didn't say sometime, it said they will always materialize. And we can't get a better guarantee than that if we work for them. Now, after he says on the bottom of page 83, in reading our promises, if we have been painstaking with this phase of our development, so that means he's saying if we have been painstaking with the first 9 steps, we'll be amazed before we are halfway through. You know, halfway through the first 9 steps, we are halfway through our development. And I didn't say halfway through the steps because this is 3/4 of the way through the steps. But the first 9 steps then will give us half of our development. That means the other half of our development lies in the last 3 steps. And, you know, this is the excitement of Alcoholics Anonymous is not, you know, I think it's so much we talk about just getting off of alcohol. But the other half of our development is a continuous process as we go into the last 3 steps, which we practice for the rest of our life.
Twice Bill has mentioned, once in his story and once in chapter 2, a fourth dimension of existence. Now, we've been talking about 3 dimensions. And they are the normal 3 dimensions that human beings know about. But twice he's talked about being placed into a fourth dimension that they never dreamed existed. You know, this thing we get at the end of step 9 is so great that we tend to think it could not possibly be any better than this is. And it is probably the best we've ever had. But there is another dimension of existence yet where we can go beyond this and be better yet, feel better. Everything in this universe either grows or dies, progresses or regresses, goes forward or goes back. Nothing can stay the same. If we could just keep what we got at the end of the first 9 steps, God, that would be great. But we don't seem to be able to do that. Now, people refer to the next 3 steps as maintenance steps. And we won't insult them calling them maintenance steps. We think that they are growth steps, and we believe that they are designed to put us into a fourth dimension of existence that we never dreamed existed, to allow us to become continually more well and more well and more well and more well. And I believe we'll be able to show you where the growth actually takes place through these next 3 steps.
You know, we can't maintain anything in life. Even we look at something that's like a rock or something, a piece of steel, we know that even though it appears to be pretty sturdy, it is in a state of deterioration gradually. And life is either getting better or nothing can remain the same or it's getting worse. And we have the ability in Alcoholics Anonymous as a result of alcoholism, we'll find a program of living that enables us to live better, we think, than most people on the face of this earth. We have the tools, we have principles, we have a program to live by. And I think that, you know, this is the thrill of Alcoholics Anonymous, that we can grow for the rest of our lives. And we see all type of lives in Alcoholics Anonymous. For some reason or another, we got off into how long you've been sober. But the book doesn't say anything about that. This book don't say how long you've been sober. But it talks about the quality of your sobriety, not the quantity. And what's really important is the quantity of our lives, not the quality of our sobriety, but the quantity of our sobriety.
Other way,
Charlie said. But it's the quantity of our lives, not how long we've been sober, but the real quality of our lives. And we see all different things around Alcoholics Anonymous. We see people real quality of life. We see them sparkle in the eye. We see that open-mindedness and that quietness in their lives and that sheer serenity and the great wisdom in their lives. And then we see other people just, kind of so-so, not drinking, none of them drinking. And then we see other people around. You see them in every club room who've been around and got that white-knuckle sobriety and they're mad all the time. And you want to buy them a drink. You ever say, yeah. And we all have our own. There's nothing wrong with that. We all have our own desires or whatever we want. But it's here. It's really here. If we repractice these twos over and over in our lives. Now, the great excitement of these last three steps is we enter that plane. And since we had so much development in the first nine steps, then we're going to have a continuous working, really, of that same process. We're not going to have anything new. If that worked that well to bring those promises, then we're going to take those twos and continue to use them over on a daily basis. We begin here at step 10. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Now remember, step 5 said it was the beginning of the spiritual experience. So through working of 6, 7, 8, 9, we have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow, not maintain, but to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
What step did we do that in? Would anybody like to answer? Step 4, wasn't it? Okay.
When they crop up, we ask God to remove them.
What steps did we use to do that in? 6 and 7, yeah. Didn't we? Okay.
We discuss them with someone immediately.
What step did we do that in?
5.
And we make amends if we harmed anyone.
What steps did we do that in?
8 and 9.
Okay.
So step 10 is a continuous working of the other improving steps. It's continuous taking of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9. We can see the total impossibility to take the first 9 steps and then to continue taking those steps on a daily basis and ever remain the same. It would be totally impossible to remain the same. We would have to grow as we continue to eliminate things out of our lives. And we said this is a program, they say you got to get serenity, you got to get peace of mind. And maybe, we kind of throws us off. We don't have to get serenity or get peace of mind. What we have to do is our book talks about it's a program of elimination. Rather than getting things, it's a program of removing. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Take away my difficulties. Remove the things which are. And as we remove these things, we will have peace of mind. We will have serenity. This is what our program is, a program of growing through elimination.
One of the great dangers in working the steps off of the wall, step 10 is a perfect example. Now, we read 10 off the wall and says continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. And we read that off the wall, we get the idea in our head that step 10 is just inventorying to see if we've hurt anybody, and if we do, admit it. And somewhere we've picked up the idea that we wait till we go to bed at night to do that. Now, this paragraph we just read is the only thing in here on step 10. It doesn't say anything about waiting until we go to bed at night. What it does do is say to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's step 4. When these crop up, we ask God to remove them. That's 6 and 7. Then we discuss them with someone immediately, and that's 5. And then we make amends if we've harmed anyone, and that's 8 and 9. So we can see within this paragraph, it tells us to practice steps 4 through 9 on a continual basis, really all the time we're awake. Why, if I get up and go to work and it's 8:30 and I run across a problem and I get all screwed up in my head and it's 8:30 in the morning, why wait till 10:30 at night when I go to bed to do something about it? Now, why waste my whole day? Why not stop at 8:30 and say, okay, Charlie, what caused it? Is it your selfishness, your dishonesty, your resentment? See, these are the same things that we've been talking about over and over and over, the same character defects. Figure out which one it is. Ask God to take it away. Discuss it with someone immediately. Make amends if I've harmed anybody. And within 30 minutes, I can be feeling great and enjoy the rest of the day. I don't have to live that way anymore if I don't want to. Now, there's a process here that I can use to keep myself on a good, even keel. I would defy anybody in this room to work step 10 the way the big book says to work it and stay the way you are. You absolutely cannot do that. Because every time you go through this process, you learn more about yourself. Every time you go through this process, the character defects become less. Every time you go through this process, you make a closer contact with God as you understand Him. And every time you go through this process, you have more peace of mind and more happiness, and you have less chance of taking a drink anyhow. This is a growth step. Now, you get some more results from this thing, too. We're always talking about promises on 83 and 84. Let's look at those on 84 and 85. And we have ceased fighting anything or even anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. Remember in step 2, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Sane thinking when it comes to alcohol. By this time, sanity has returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. And we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We are not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we had been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. And that is our experience. And that's how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Remember way back in the chapter, We Agnostics, page 45, said the main object of the book is to enable us to find a power greater than ourselves, which will solve our problem. And we emphasized then, it doesn't say which will enable us to solve it, or that will help us to solve it. It said which will solve it. From that page on, we've been looking at how to find the power. We have gone through a process to find the power. By this time, we have found the power. And the power has solved the problem. The obsession to drink has been removed. And in my life, I don't know when it was. I couldn't tell you, was it on step 4? I don't know. Was it halfway between 6 and 7? I don't know. I know somewhere between step 3 and step 10, I woke up one morning and I realized that I didn't want to drink. And I said, Charlie, when was the last day you wanted to take a drink? And I said, I don't know. And it had been removed unbeknownst to me. Now, I know me better than anybody in the world knows me. And I know if I had to fight the desire to drink on a daily basis, day after day after day, I know exactly what I'd do. I'd get drunk. I'd have to. But you see, I don't have to fight it, because it has been taken away as the result of this course of action that the big book has just described for us.
It is not easy to let up on this spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism, but what we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition.
There's where maintenance comes from.
Didn't say, yeah.
Maintenance on a daily basis. This building that we're in, beautiful thing. You can spend $5 million on this thing and sooner or later it's going to fall down. But we can maintain it one day at a time on a daily basis. And that's really what we do with our spiritual condition on a daily basis. Maintenance is not a forever thing. It is simply one daily thing, period.
Every day is a day we must carry the visions of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along these lines all we wish. It is the proper use of our will. You know, in step three, we made a decision to turn our will over to God. And now we see here after step 10, we get our will back.
Isn't that great?
Isn't that great? And he says, now you know how to use it. I'm going to give it back to you. But we always laugh at how precise this program is. He gives us our will back on 85. But he gives us our sanity back first on 84 before we can use our will.
He didn't let us have the will till the sanity had already been returned. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction. Did you see Bill laughing? And direction from him who has all knowledge and power. If we've carefully followed directions, not suggestions, directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense. We must go further, and that means more action. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. And we shouldn't be shy on this matter. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work ethic. I found that I really didn't know how to pray, and I certainly knew nothing about meditation. And I had to go back to my old sponsor to ask him about prayer and meditation. But you see, about the only prayer that I knew was one that I used as a kid. Now I lay me down to sleep, I pray the Lord my soul to keep. And if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord. Man, that ain't a very good prayer, anyway. That's dealing with it. About the only other prayer I knew was, if you'll get me out of this damn mess. And another favorite was, if you'll do this for me, I'll do that for you. And that was about the extent of my prayer life. And I went to the sponsor and told him about that. I said, I can't do it. I just don't have it. He said, Charlie, prayer and meditation is very simple. He said, most people complicate the hell out of it. He said, all it really is talking to God and then being quiet and listening for the answers. And he said, as you talk, you pray, and as you listen, you meditate. And I said, great, how do you do it? He said, let me take you to page 86, 87, 88 in the big book. And he said, I believe I can give you some definite and valuable suggestions on how to build a prayer life so that you can stay in continual conscious contact with God as you understand. And he brought me to the book and he showed me some suggestions. And we'd like to share those with you tonight. And I think it'll be easy to see if we would use these. We can develop a prayer life, and we can, through meditation, receive God's will in our life and be able to live as the kind of people He would like to have us be. Joe?
Yeah, I guess stand in awe when I come to these pages of the big book And think that this man, you know, with 4 years, through 2 or 3 or 4 years of sobriety, he wasn't a spiritual giant. How he could put some instructions on 3 pages of a book to enable people that had no spiritual lives whatsoever to develop fully developed prayer life. These basic little tools that lie within these 2.5 pages. He said it would be easy to be vague about this matter. Surely, here he said, you know, I wish I could just be vague and skip over this thing. He said, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And right within these pages, he will tell us, he will give us some precise definitions to develop a prayer life. First thing, he will tell us what to do at night. Then he will tell us what to do in the morning. Then he'll tell us what we do when we're in indecisions. He then tells us how to pray. And he will tell us what to do in doubt. All these definite, if we just could practice those little principles in our prayer and meditation in life, we could start right where we're at and develop a healthy spiritual life. Off of these basic tools that he gives us, these definite and valuable suggestions.
When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Here's those same character defects coming back again he's talking about. Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the mainstream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And again, we have a little handout sheet that we kind of made up, and it's really, again, nothing new. On the left-hand side of the sheet, it would be called the personality characteristics of self-will. And we headed it up with the same defects or shortcomings or faults that we've been talking about all the way through the book. Selfish and self-seeking, dishonesty, frightened, inconsiderate. Then went to the 12 and 12. And in the 12 and 12, he lists a whole lot more character defects. Pride, greed, lust, anger, envy, sloth, gluttony, impatience, intolerance, resentment, and etc. Those are all characteristics of a self-willed individual. The right-hand side of the sheet is the personality characteristics of God's will. And all we've tried to do is take the opposite of self-will and put it on the right-hand side of the sheet. For instance, a selfish, self-seeking person, if he operated on God's will, he would become interested in others. The opposite of dishonesty, of course, is honesty. The opposite of frightened is to have courage. Inconsideration is to be considerate of other people. And I find that if I lay down at night with this little sheet and constructively review my day, it doesn't take a couple minutes to run down this sheet and see which side of the scale I'm on. Almost invariably, I'll find that I'm on both sides of the scale. Some days I'll be on more on the left than I am on the right. Other days I'll be more on the right than I am on the left. One day I'll have dishonesty on one side, and the next day I may go back to honesty on the other side. But I find as I practice this, and look me over on a daily basis and see what I've been doing wrong and ask God's forgiveness and the power to change, that daily I can change myself much, much further even than I did in 6 and 7 through a slow, changing process, going from the old mental habits over to the new mental habits. And gradually I can learn to live more on the right-hand side of the sheet than I do the left-hand side of the sheet. You can't change nothing unless you know what you need to change. And unless we look at it on a daily basis, we forget what we need to change. And we get right back into that mess, and we're in it, and we don't even know we're there. Most successful people, whatever they are doing, inventory themselves on a daily basis to see where they are. And if we'll do this, we will grow. I would defy anybody in the room to use the sheet and do this on a daily basis and stay where you are. You just can't do that.
Okay, now, it gives us what to do in the morning. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking it to be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we employ our mental facilities with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is clear of the wrong motives. You know, I think, you know, this is a positive way of prayer, to ask our God to direct our thinking before the day and to direct our lives. And I think that this is what we have to do, and we're talking about formulating a new prayer life. You know, many times in my life before, it didn't work, but my old way of life was to run and do my life like I wanted to do all day long, and at night I would ask for forgiveness. Now, that's sort of a negative way, you know. And we're talking about using God before the day to direct our thinking, and maybe we won't have need all that forgiveness at night. Now, it says our thought life, our mind, will be placed on a much higher plane when we are clear of the wrong motives. Now, in thinking about our day, we may face indecisions, and this is what happens throughout the day. We may not be able to determine which course to take. And each day, you know, in our lives, and I realize that, you know, I am very insignificant on the face of this earth, that I have a few years to pass through this plane. And during my journey through this earth, I'm exposed to very little of the total information that's on this earth, you know, as an individual. And there are many things that just my past experience and the few things I learned is all that I have within me. And that means each day that I'm going to face something that is beyond the information that I have. And if a man, my book says, self-knowledge is insufficient. So I have to have this too, this great too. And now when I run into something that I don't have, you know, I just got a little bit of stored information of my experience and my knowledge up here. When something comes up in my life each day that I can't handle, I go into my little computer in my past experience and I turn it on. And it don't take a few seconds for it's exalted itself and it says, no compute. We ain't got that answer. You know, it really, and as you keep turning the tapes, it gets frustrated. You keep on searching. It means there's nothing there. Now, he tells us how to do that. If we don't have the information and we're in doubt, he says we ask God for inspiration and to his thought a decision. We plug into a knowledge, and God has all knowledge. You know, I realize today that God probably has 10,000 answers for every problem I've got. Every problem I've got, he's got 10,000 answers. But I can wrestle with it on my own basis if I choose. But if I can turn this thing off and plug into another source of information, it says relax and take it easy and don't struggle. Now, once I turn this over to God and for information, then I can go on about, I can't do anything about that because I don't have the answer, but I'm at least free to go do some other task. Maybe I can go wash the dishes. Maybe I can go cut the grass. When I was sitting there worrying, I couldn't do nothing. But it frees me to do something else. Now, after a period of time, we are often surprised how the right answer comes after we have tried this for a while. After a while, when I start my mind back up on this subject, a problem I had, right within my mind, I have some additional information. Something said, why don't you call Charlie about that? And I call old Charlie about that, and he tells me the answer, and everything works out fine. But before this morning, I couldn't think about calling Charlie. So we begin to practice this, and I remember when I first began to use this in my life, I used to say, boy, I'm sure glad I thought of that. But as we begin to practice this, it says, what used to be in a hunch, we've all had this all our lives. This is nothing new, but we haven't been able to make it work. We've all had hunches in our lives. What used to be in hunch or an occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of our mind. If we can practice this, if we practice at it, and we become to rely upon it. I can rely upon this in my life today. I know that God has 10,000 answers for every problem I have. I don't have any problems I can't find answers to, not within my being, but within the use of this step. Now, if you're still new, being still inexperienced and having just made contact with God, if you're new in the program, we have to work at this for years, maybe, or months. We're not probably going to be expired at all times. We might pay for this presumption and all sort of action and ideas, and we will. New people in the program, this will be quite a problem. But as you find as time passes, nevertheless, our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on a plane of inspiration. And you will find that we come to rely upon it at one point after we use this for a while.
Sometimes we get the idea in meditation, and perhaps it's from another spiritual movement we've been in, or perhaps a spiritual movement we've read about. But in order to meditate, you have to be able to free your mind entirely from all thought. Maybe some people can do that, I don't know. If they can, more power to them. I've never been able to do that. My mind just seems to be a little thing that boils up there all the time. In some cases, people say, well, you ought to go off and lay down somewhere and clear your mind. I've never been able to do that. But in the context of the big book, meditation is simply to ask God for the right thought or action, then relax and take it easy. And I believe the relaxing and taking it easy, what they're saying is put that out of your mind and go on about something else. And as Joe says, go wash the dishes. Go mow the grass. Go paint the house. Go do something worthwhile. And after a while, the right thought or action comes. And many, many times, the answer comes from another human being. There's doubt that God doesn't talk directly to human beings too often. Sometimes he does. Here recently, Moses was one of the last ones. Well, we got one or two running around today, says he does. There's one up out where I live, says he's got his telephone number. But he don't share it with anybody else. Usually, our answer will come through people, if we're alert and if we're ready to receive the answer. And it's amazing how this actually does work. And this is being into the fourth dimension. This is being in a conscious contact. This is being able to receive direction in our life that we could never receive before. And it seems the only way we can do it is ask for guidance and then relax and take it easy. Go on about our business, and after a while, the right answer will come.
We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, and to be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask expressly for freedom from self-will, and are careful to make no request for ourselves. We may ask for ourselves, however, with others to be our help. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing it. It just doesn't work. We easily see why. And here we have to know if what we have been doing hasn't worked. We're talking about experimenting with prayer. Maybe changing our, experimenting, because after all, it hasn't worked spiritually for us. And it talks about developing a new prayer life and focusing on prayer. And I know, this was, and it says we don't pray for our own selfish ends. We don't ask for anything for ourselves. And this was foreign to my nature as far as prayer was concerned. I, At one time in my life, I attempted this. And I know that, I think one of the bills says that one of the most fascinating points that he learned in the whole process of the steps, or the whole process of this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous, was the prayer, using prayer and meditation, two tools, to receive God's will and the power to carry it out, rather than using just prayer as a tool to sway God's will and list his petty needs. You know, all my life I had used prayer as an instrument to sway God's will and list my petty needs. You know what I mean? And I had a guy like Santa Claus, you know. And here, I tell him, I want this, I want this, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, I want you to do this, and don't let this happen, and don't let that happen. But there's no need. I would not tonight. I realize the power of God in my life, and there was no need to waste. I would not exchange tonight the things, a list of the things that I think I need, for a list of the things that God wants me to have. I would rather have the list of the things that God wants me to have than the things that I think I need. Some of the things I think I need will hurt me. I don't know what I need. So there's no need for me to tell God what I need. All I need to use prayer, cluttering up the lines, all I need to use prayer for is directions into my life. And I always wonder how my prayer life was formulated. And I know we ask you to experiment with our conception. We ask you to use our way of, try this, it might work. And you know, sometimes we alcoholics, we're just hard to change some of our old habits. And I know that I always think about where my prayer life was formulated, and it was in a small church in our community that we went. And I watched other people, and this is where I got my conception of prayer. And we used to, in our church, we had one old brother that would pray every Sunday morning, and I remember him. I can just see him. He would get down on his knees, and he had a big. Remember, he had a watch bob. He used to dangle when he got out on his knees. I was a little kid. And I can see this man down there praying. And he had on a brown suit. I guess that was his Sunday suit. But he'd do the job every Sunday morning. Take him 20 minutes or half hour to pray. And I remember he would ask God to bless the sick and the poor and the shut-in, the Chinese and the Japanese and everybody he could think of, and the president and the preacher. And he would ask God for everything he had in heaven, everything on the place. And as he finished, he would always, I remember this statement, it just burns in my mind. I guess I'll never remember it. But as he finished in his last statement of his prayer, he said, "Lord, that in our haste which we have omitted, please grant us that also." Now, you know, that's a pretty difficult, you know, here a guy comes to AA and they said, "Don't ask for nothing." You don't have to ask for nothing. The only thing we have to pray, we focus our prayers, we refine our prayer life. We can focus our prayer into one thing. There's one need in our life. From God, the source of all information, all we need is his directions in our life and the power to carry that out. And as we begin to receive this on a daily basis, okay, if circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in the morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select or memorize a few prayers which emphasize the principles we are discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. And then this last little suggestion, he says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful. We ask for the right order of action. And this is a great little tool, another little tool on a daily basis. When we're in doubt, we pause. And this is a revolutionary change to our reaction, because most of the time when we were in doubt, we went full speed ahead. You know, You know, you'd be surprised, and it's a great little tool that we can apply to our lives. When we doubt, we can pause. And you'd be surprised. I know that I learned this in my work in many years ago when I would get in doubt about something, and I was doing maintenance work, and I'd just get confused about whatever I was working on, and I'd get beaten on it, and I'd get ready to tear it up. And I found out the quickest way I could fix it was go get a cup of coffee. And I found out I'd go get a cup of coffee and come back, and when I come back, it was obvious what I was doing. I would look at it all in a different way. You know, and I think we can, you know, we can clear our minds, and we can turn it over to God, and we can have a different outlook at the same problem which we're banging our heads about. And we can practice these are some definite and valuable suggestions. And if we apply these, there's no way that we can apply these suggestions to our life on a daily basis and remain spiritually the same. We would have to grow spiritually by using the tools on these two pages, page 86 and page 87.
We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We have become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. We alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple manner we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12, and we, of course, will not attempt to do the whole next chapter, but we do want to talk a little bit about it. Now, in step 11, we've been discussing a way to receive God's will in our lives so we would know what it is that we need to be doing. And for me anymore, it really isn't too difficult to deal with God's will because I think I know what it is. Well, step 12 gives us probably the greatest promise in the book. Step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening, as the result of these steps, not a result or some result, but the result, singular. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics. You know, the greatest promise that I could possibly receive out of the book is a spiritual awakening, which is a personality change sufficient to recover from the disease. We saw what that was in Appendix 2. And now that we have had it, what is it we're supposed to do with it? And I think we're only here for one reason. Period. 97 out of 100 alcoholics never get where we are tonight. Well, most of them die from the disease of alcoholism. And I used to say, God, why not I? How come? Why am I one of those that hasn't died? Tonight I think I know. I think God got tired of seeing alcoholics die from the disease. I think way back in the 30s he selected some people. And I think he took Dr. Silkworth and Dr. Yoon and the Oxford groups, and Bill and Bob, and Bill D, and the rest of the first 100. And I think he used them as his messengers. You know, God usually works with people through people. And I think he gave you and I the fellowship and the program as we know it today. But before he gave it to us, he let us experience the disease of alcoholism. Because in order to work with another alcoholic and help another alcoholic, you just almost have to be an alcoholic. You never can understand an alky unless you're one. And in order for us to understand, he had to let us go through our disease. But I think he watched us. And I think he said, here's one I'm going to use. And I'm going to keep him alive until he learns what I need for him to learn. And then I'm going to remove the obsession to drink. And then I'm going to use him to help other alcoholics that still suffer. That's the only reason we're here. Most of us ought to be dead. How many of us have almost been killed, and we wake up the next morning and we say, God, wasn't we lucky last night? Yeah. Not one time, but in many cases, 2, 3, 4, and 5 times. Why are we not one of those that's already dead or in the nut house or elsewhere from our disease? I think God gave us a moment of clarity. And that moment of clarity let us see what alcohol was doing to us. And then I think He gave us the grace to have the desire to do something about it. And then we acted on it, and then we received. And there's an old spiritual axiom that you cannot get anything for nothing. You can't keep it unless you're willing to give it away. If you receive, you must be willing to return. And the only no question in my mind about God's will, my only question is, what are we doing about it? Are we really carrying it out? What is the message we have to carry? We don't have some message. We don't have anybody else's message. We have this message. And this message is the spiritual awakening contained within the first, within the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So when we carry our message, this is what we do. We who have come to know have experienced the spiritual awakening. Now our job is to go to the man who still suffers. And if the man is still suffering and he's hurting, then we can say we know. Then we can say to him, we know exactly where you're coming from, because we used to be there too. And our life was screwed up like yours. And we were drinking like you are. And we wasn't happy. And we came to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and within the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, we found the book. And within the book called Alcoholics Anonymous, we found a program. And we applied the program in our life to the best of our ability. And as the result of the program, we've had a spiritual awakening, and we are not that way anymore. And then we can say to the new one, if you would be as we are, then you come to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And within the fellowship, you'll find a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And within the book, you'll find the program. And within the program, if you use it in your life, you will have a spiritual awakening. And then you ain't going to be that way anymore either. And that's the only message that you and I have. That's the only one we know. We're not healers. We like to think we are, but we're not. You know. We're not spiritual advisors. We sure as hell are the world's worst economic advisors that the world ever saw. We have a very simple message, and it is the message of recovery as contained in the 12-step program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the spiritual awakening as the result of the first 11 steps. You know, as we've talked before, we've always talked about Paul Revere. And Paul Revere was a great message carrier. Probably one of the most well-known message carriers that we know. And Paul had a simple message. He said, Paul, ride through town and tell them the British are coming, the British are coming. Don't do anything but that. And Paul rode through town and he said, the British are coming, the British are coming. And he went on to the next town and he said, the British are coming, the British are coming. Paul never got off his horse and told them what to do about it. If they'd sent Ben Franklin, sure as hell, the first street corner, he'd have got a soapbox and he would have begun to preach. And we'd all be speaking with British accents today. So mine and your message is very simple. Our only question is, what are we going to do with the information we got? Are we carrying it to the best of our ability? Are we willing to do it? Have we fit ourselves for maximum service to God knows about us? Or are we still selfishly trying to hold what we have and not sharing it with other people? Joe?
Yeah, the 12th step again is a growth step. And it is probably one of the greatest growth steps in the whole 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. As we practice this step, we grow. And as we said, that if we look at the whole 11 steps that we have taken, we'll probably get more growth in our lives through the 12th step than all the other 11 put together. The 12th step is the greatest growth step in the program. And it was said, you know, it's been said that it is more blessed to give in the 12th step than to receive in the first 11. You know, this is, it says that having had, those of us having had this vital spiritual experience, then we know we have had the results. Remember at step two, we was talking about we just could barely come to believe when we began the other day. And once we believed, then we made a decision, then we took actions, and now after we have had, then we know. Now, the one who knows, the one who has had this vital spiritual experience can go to the new person. And as he goes to the new person, he can help him come to believe. As remember in Bill's story, when Ebby stood before him, you know, sober, and enabled him to come to believe. And this is our responsibility, and really it's not our responsibility as Charlie just said to the healing. We can't help an alcoholic, really. This is about the only thing we can do, enable him to come to believe. After he comes to believe, he's going to have to work for it the same way we did. But we can give him the opportunity. And it tells us on page 91, it tells us how to do it. Exactly. And the 12th step, you know, we do so many different things. But the 12th step is very plain in our book if we study. At first, we'll engage in general conversation. After a while, we turn to talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking, your habits, your symptoms, your experience, and encourage him to speak of himself. And we get to begin to talk about our drinking. We get him to identify with us. Over on page 92, tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned you were sick. And this is where we begin the other night. The first thing we learned is we had a disease. Give him account of the struggle you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink. That sounds like the first step. We suggest you do this with a chapter about alcoholism. If he's an alcoholic, he will understand at once. He will match your mental inconsistency with some of his own. If he's not satisfied he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopelessness features of the malady. Show him from your own experience how the queer mental conditions around the first drink prevents normal function of the willpower. Don't at this stage refer to this book. You know, don't give him, you know, I know in my early days of 12-stepping, I didn't. He's showing us how those who have had the 12-step can go to another person and let him take the first step through us. It's like looking in the mirror. He can see himself in us. Where else can a drunk find himself but in another drunk? Where else can one alcoholic find himself except in another alcoholic? And he can find himself in us. He can take the first step. And once he sees where he's at, then this is our job, and we can do this better. There's no one else he can find himself. The only way I could see myself was in another alcoholic who came to me on a 12-step call and told me about, he laid down his life and allowed me to see where I was through looking through what he gave me. Okay. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the condition of the body and the mind. So much the 12-step is enabling this individual to take the first step. You know, I made great mistakes in, I think, in my early days of 12-step work. I did not do this, and I didn't really take the detail. I had such zeal to help the person that I didn't allow him to take the first step. I didn't enable him to take the first step. Most time they were still drunk, and I'd run in there, and I'd say, "You need God. You need to start on your inventory." But about the only thing that we can do as individuals, and this is our humble role, is to enable that person to begin to see where he's at through us. And if there's any recovery involved, he suffered from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. If any recovery involved in this person's life, is not our responsibility. Our responsibility is carry the message that and that first step. And the recovery will lie within the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and the power of God working in that individual's life, not us. We have a very humble role, as we said, just carrying a simple message. And my book said, if the man's not interested, don't waste no time. You know, sure you find someone else interested. This is an awesome responsibility, and any alcoholic can do that. You know, and we grow through giving. We grow through doing this in the lives of other people. And this is the way, you know, this fellowship has grown. It started off with the first 100. And the first 100, you know, they had the results and they went and carried the message to other alcoholics. Now the alcoholics came to believe and they came to believe. They took the steps and they got the results and they knew and they went to the next guy and helped the next guy come to believe. And this is the chain of reaction. We grow through giving. Through the 12 step of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, the final statement of the 12 step, and sometimes we always get down to the 12 step and never get to give it, do the real justice to this beautiful step. But it says we apply these principles to all our affairs, and I think that we sometimes make a lot out of the what are the principles that we're talking about. If we would, on page 60, after we, of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, we hear this read at every meeting. After the steps that we set down in our book, it says, many of us explain what an order I can go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. And he's just set down the 12 steps. So the 12 steps are the principles that we apply to all our lives. And you know, the principles are the bottom line to something. Principles never change. And I think that this is why it so fascinates me about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the Alcoholics Anonymous gives us the principles to live by. And I think that's one of the most difficult things in human life, and it was in my life, that I've never had any principles to live by. Now, the principles are really the directions of something. You know, no one gave me the principles in my life. They gave me the rules, but they never gave me the directions of how to live. And when you don't have the directions, you always break the rules. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me the directions to live by. You know, it's very peculiar. Everything on earth has its directions or its principles. There's a principle to everything. There's a principle in the chair you sit in. You know, you really have to sit in that chair the way it was designed. You can't sit on the bottom of it. And the same way about our lives. Our lives, everything has a principle. And surely human life has a principle. There is a design to living. You know, the principles in our big book are not new. They're old as mankind himself. They're in many great books that deal with human life. You know, as we went through our steps tonight, we looked at those steps, and we said, you know, you start off with 1, 2, and 3, you put in your spiritual life, 4, 5, 6, and 7, you work on your mind, and 8 and 9, you work on your relationship with others. You know, many thousands of years ago, a man said, seek ye first the kingdom of God. He said, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all thy soul, 1, 2, and 3, with all thy mind, 4, 5, 6, and 7, He said, and thy neighbor as thyself, 8 and 9. So that wasn't nothing new. The principles of human life are as old as mankind himself. And now that we have principles, if you use a product by its principles, then you will have peace and harmony. You know, we are given life, and there is a design to living, giving us the 12 steps of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the closer we follow the design of life, surely we will not need to drink alcohol. And not only will we need to find alcohol, we can live better than most people on the face of this earth. I always talk about my little old car, but I got a new one now. When I got this new car here recently, it's a Ford. And in the glove compartment was a set of principles. Now, I got it. I own it now. At least I got the title. But, you know, it's mine, but I can't use it like I want to. I could, but it wouldn't give me very good service. That's the way I did in my life. You know, when I got this car, I got this little book of principles out, and it tells me what to do. And the closer I follow those directions, the better service I get out of this car. Now, this little book of directions in my car of principles was written by the Ford Motor Car Company. You know, God, or the director, the creator, rather, of a product always writes the principles. God created man, and he wrote a set of principles by which we can live by. And if we follow those principles in all our affairs, there will be harmony, peace of mind, and contentment in our lives. We can't do what we want to. We have to follow these directions on a daily basis.
That little book in the glove pocket of his car is called A Set of Directions, Not Suggestions. Page 164, and we'll close. With the last two paragraphs on the last page, the last chapter, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God, and we do that in steps 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to Him and your fellows, and we do that in 4, 5, 6, and 7. Clear away the wreckage of the past, and we do that in 8 and 9. Give freely what you find and join us, and we do that in 10, 11, and 12. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you all for letting us be here.